Okay, so I've been given the official role of gong master to keep this session moving along. Unfortunately, the college decided that I wasn't allowed to bring the giant gong up from downstairs because somebody had put a dent in it. I guess they hit it too hard. So now I'm going to pretend to be a gong by going gong and coming up here. And that's best I can do. Okay, so we're going to get three sets of reports. The first set of report is going to be on NetBSD. Then we're going to get a report on OpenBSD. And finally, we're going to get a report on FreeBSD. And so as to give them as much time as possible, I'm going to turn it over right now.
That's good. How do I get it full screen, Robert?
Go up to view.
Yeah.
Slideshow.
Yeah. Thank you. Right, that's me. I have got a lot of slides to go through, and I have 8 minutes to do it in, so please bear with me.
Let's just make sure it's going to do the trick here.
Yep. There we go. 2009, a great year for NetBSD. Thank you to everybody who's been involved in this, and yes, thank you. Right, NetBSD 5.0 is released late in April.
Yes, you have to hit pause down here.
Ah.
Improvement away from the other mic. Well, get us the mic over here.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Very good.
Up there, just describing what the release actually has in it and the performance figures that we got from it. Talking of performance figures, those are some of the ones up there that show different versions of FreeBSD, Fedora Core, and two NetBSD versions. It's not all good news, though, for NetBSD. It's great news, because this is another one from the same thing. It shows the same kind of performance figures that we're getting. This is a build shell of the whole release, so it took NetBSD just over 1,500 seconds to do it, around about the same time as Fedora Core. NetBSD doesn't have quite the resources that Fedora does. Ruby benchmarks, we saw those just recently, and there's some continuing discussion over those. For the community that the other players that that NetBSD want to involve and are involving, we've got a blog now, we've got a wiki, and these are the guys that do the evangelism for us. So thank you very much, all of you who do that for us. We've also started to fund projects. Part of the development of 5.0 was funded. We are way behind Linux in funding. In some ways, that's a good thing. We're not beholden to anybody, and money can damage things in certain ways, so we're quite happy that we have some money, but not too much, and we're going to be funding the development that we want when we want it. 6.0 and beyond, I'll give you a slight taster of there. Some changes are already in the repository, obviously. That's fairly obvious because we've gone up to version 18 of the kernel, the current kernel. The roadmaps now, we're NetBSD, we're beyond roadmaps, we do satnavs these days. Right. If you want to see the old tech, it's in source.roadmaps. There are four roadmaps documented there, and these are the things that we're looking at doing over the next 6 months to a year. In the repo, there's 64-bit TimeT. Christos did a marvelous job with this. There are kernel modules in there, NameI improvements. We've got a MIP64 port, many, many other good things in there. Well worth a look. To come, we've got all of the things written down there. I don't particularly want to read them out. You're much faster at them at reading these than I am at speaking them, and I'll just take up time. So we're going to the networking one now. Mobile IPv6 we're looking at having. The SCTP stuff from FreeBSD, we're very interested in that and seeing what comes of that. We'd like TCP support in libSA, and we'd also like to do the netboot from HTTP. We're looking at doing all of those. On the storage side of things, we've got the logical volume manager, and Had was talking earlier on this weekend about that one. Interesting piece of work. We know it works because it's the Linux LVM, but with the BSD driver in its place in the kernel. Excellent piece of work. Thank you very much, Had, and we're looking forward to it. The other projects might want to look at that as well. ZFS or ZFS, we're behind the curve on that, certainly behind FreeBSD. But we've got a very good implementation of it there and thereabouts. Again, Google Summer of Code project for the last two summers. Again, Had was working on that. Excellent work again. iSCSI Initiator. We have a user-level, user-land initiator in place at the moment. It works very well. I talked about that in a number of conferences. And the RUMP extensions from Anticante, make some work again. To come, we've got our device file system. We're going to be getting an in-kernel iSCSI initiator as well for all those of you who are worried about the user level one. Why? I don't know, but yeah, that's life. We've got Refuse low-level implementation coming along and virtualized disks, a library that virtualizes all the disk images for our virtual things. On the virtualization front, we have NetBSD User Mode, which is a research project, which is actually running an instance of NetBSD in userland, a bit like User Mode Linux UML. We have some more enhancements planned for in the Xen world. We've got DOMU migration, suspend and resume planned. We've got a balloon driver in the repo as well. Thank you. Further to come is the jails by Kaoth. Christoph was talking about that last year. iSCSI booting off the in-kernel initiator and iSCSI device cloning as well. We're looking at doing a lot of stuff with iSCSI, it seems. I talked about the RBAC kernel earlier on this weekend. Kaoth with more scopes is coming, and it's actually in the repo now as well. Jails and NetPGP, obviously an excellent piece of work. We're looking to branch 6.0 in March 2010 and release it over the summer. Thank you very much. Any questions? Good. Thank you very much for listening.
You've all enjoyed the con. I was told that. Thank you, man. I was asked to do this in the bar yesterday, so sorry I may not be quite as prepared as you'd hoped. And Henny has kind of given slides for me. Anyway, moving on to the things we've done in the last 6 months and things within the last release, we've had quite a lot of change in the mid layer. There was a hackathon in Stockholm a few months ago. There was finally working on making the buffer cache dynamic. Now, if you tweak the right knob, it can go up to 90% of memory. It speeds things like build and anything disk intensive up an awful lot. Then, Thordor Bjørnsen, the Icelandic developer who works on NFS, has been doing a lot of work on cleaning up the NFS code with Brett Lambert. And they've, nowadays, I think they made a NetBSD, a NFS build do, I think it was about 30% faster. Then, with some of the more far-reaching changes, Bob Beck, one of our Canadian developers, has been working on cleaning up the whole VFS middleware. He started off by making the name cache dynamic. Now, instead of being a big static cache table, it's just a tree of dynamically allocated nodes. And his next move, which he's currently working on, is to make vnodes a lot more dynamic and remove some of the recycling behavior. Then, finally, there's been a lot of work in the VM system. The biggest one, which is not actually committed yet, but should be soon, as soon as some problems on virtually indexed cache architecture fix, is the new allocator, written by a new developer, Ariane Verstappen. She's written an allocator that's very good at dealing with continuous memory. Then, we've been working on the scuffy middleware recently, just cleaning it up, trying to make some of the error passing a bit more correct. And onto that, he added a new driver, vscuffy, which allows you to have disk drivers done in userland, which was used to mock up the new driver for multipath disks, mpath, and then in Stockholm, Claudio, who's normally a network developer, in 3 days, using vscuffy, managed to hack up an iSCSI client, which worked even though it crashed NetBSD. Then the soft RAID, the replacement for RAID frames, had quite a lot of work going on for it. It now has reverse, as RAID is 0.156 and crypto, and working on making soft RAID boots is going underway. Since another JSON, we're going to use a We got rid of the user bin window finally and replaced it with Tmux, the same. And we also imported the developer, because it was working with the Ethereum interface. It's like works like screen, but its code is down quite nicer. Crashes less, it actually works. And another big project we've had is the new SMT daemon. It's an iMessage style version of Septaemon. It's working fairly well already. I've been using this on all my machines and so have a few other people, and apparently they developers think it's becoming very production ready. Now, also, there was a work by Cliff Apps, who has been working on a compiler for Mandok, so we can finally get rid of Groff. Hardware-wise, well, very recently there was some work on doing SMP on SDI machines. We've also, with respect to CGI, been supporting a lot of new machines, or we have that there. And we also now have a port for Palm machines. Continuing with hardware, well, Spark 64, everything works. Still the only free OS on the Git Sparks. And Mark Contenis then has been working on getting working in the virtualization domains on Niagara Service. Everything works for clients, and he's doing some work now so we could actually be the domain zero host. We have a driver for USB video cards, the display link stuff. It's getting quite a lot of attention recently. It doesn't do X yet, but it works fine with console. And well, it's actually really hard to find devices that we don't support, with the exception of some kind of graphics. Now, anyone who's used any new version of the Steam Block notice the installer. It's even easier. It's true. You could actually simply type in your root password, your host name, and then you sit there and hit enter about 50 times and leave. Then, well, it's fast. And also, we have the replacement for the common merge master script, sysmerge, which, again, is getting easier these days. You look at it, you press a few buttons, it's done. When it comes to X server, something which I suppose I should probably talk more about than this, but we have X server 1.6, 1.7 isn't out yet, even though it was due out about a year and a half ago. We have XCV, which is good for ports, and when it comes to the DRM drivers, I've started work on getting the R600 and R700 Radeon cards working, even though they're not there yet, and I've also almost got an implementation of DRM memory management for the Intel graphics cards. And network-wise, I can explain, but I'll make a network device to do it.
Yep, so during last year we got Radeon Mix, so you can have multiple interfaces with the same IP addresses in different domains, which is kind of cool. There are many little things that improved our quality performance by 50%, and the SPF changed a lot. We got match rules, which opposed to password blocks, do not change the password block state of the packet, but just modify other stuff. Directly related to the next points, scrub, there's no separate scrub rules anymore, there are actions on regular rules. And the same is in current now true for NAT. NAT is now also just actions on regular rules, no separate rules. We have MCI Reliant, which is really, really cool. It automatically sizes the RX ring size of network card drivers. So if you have a handy DDoS attack, it will shrink them and the machine stays usable. It doesn't lock off or light log anymore. There's a button to disable IPv6 on interfaces. I love that a lot, not my own. PF is now on the default, but the only thing it actually figures out is access to the X server ports. We have some improvements in ISO configuring, which I want to explain. And PF sync is now actually capable of dealing with active firewalls, so you have both nodes active. In the running demons, PHP got multiple row support, which all the exchange point operators want. We have adjustment for the running domains in many of the running units, but not everywhere yet. And we have an initial layer distribution protocol demon for RMDS support. We also discovered we like Lego. We discovered we can explain every computer problem with beer. And we had some nice hackathons. And early in the year, in January, we had the N229 network hackathon in Basel. Afterwards, we all met in Edmonton for C2K9, the general hackathon, where basically almost every OpenSUSE developer shows up. And just recently, had the file system, which was really kernel hackathon in Stockholm. We have a few more upcoming. There's a half hackathon in Coimbra in November. We have the fourth hackathon in Budapest.
2 weeks.
Soon. We don't, of course. And one we're particularly looking forward to is the network hackathon in 2010 in January. That's it. Visit that website and help us save icebergs. Thank you. Questions? Wow.
Quick. What are you doing here?
Doing that.
Is this on?
Preview happy, right?
Yes, excellent. Okay. All right. Oh, bloody hell. Stop.
I thought you said you were preview happy.
No, that's enough. I've got it. Okay. Relax.
Everybody remain calm.
Okay. So what I'm mostly going to talk about is FreeBSD 8.0, which we've just cut a release candidate for. We've gone through four betas. RC1 was cut this weekend, so that's out now. We've branched the tree, so if you're building head, you will see 9.0. It's always a good deal of fun at work because I run the head of the tree usually on my desktop, and then my colleagues don't. So they come by and go, 9? It's a lot of fun. So head is now at 9.0. Stable is about to be 8.0 once we get that out the door. Shut up. Some user-level features, because I know that our users always show up to these conferences, which is why there's only one slide of user features. We have parallel port builds. Jail has been updated. You can have multiple IP addresses. I believe there's IPv6 support in Jail now. There's quite a bit of work going on there thanks to Bjorn Z. Zen DOM-U support and better handling of hot device removal. This comes in with a lot of kernel changes we made so that now when you remove your USB key, your machine doesn't panic. Okay, kernel features, which is what the rest of this is, of course, going to be. We have super pages. That's gone into 8.0. We have text dumps so that you can have an easier way of debugging things when, as a developer, you panic your kernel. That's it. I know no one here ever panics kernel. NPSafe, TTY drivers, and TTY subsystem. A brand new USB stack, so modern USB devices are going to work on your systems no matter what they are. Hopefully all of them. Updates to the scheduler, ULE 3.0 is in the latest release. We've introduced stack smashing protection, so your stack is protected and you can't, smash it.
It's a good thing. Not so technical.
I can talk about just that for the remaining 3.5 minutes. So device and map extensions. This is something I really care about because I've got a board in the mail. MIPS support, so we now support quite a number of MIPS boards with FreeBSD, and people who are building embedded devices really care about that. So a lot of the embedded support is moving forward pretty quickly. MIPS is definitely ready for prime time in 8, and you also have ARM and some PowerPC work going on, but I'm mostly looking at MIPS, so that's what I know about. And then enhanced Linux ABI support for people who might want to run something like that. Network features, which I can talk more about. By the way, never sit anywhere near Robert Watson at dinner at a conference, because you'll be forced into giving one of his talks. So we now have our virtualized network stack. This is something that's been going on for quite a while. Marco Zek originally did this in FreeBSD 4, and then we talked about it for FreeBSD 7, and we updated a lot of code. And it turns out virtualizing a network stack is not quite as bad as making a SMP-safe kernel. But it's close. So it takes a little while to do that. That's in 8.0, so you can have multiple virtual network stacks running on your system all at the same time. Some people like that for testing, and ISPs like it for being able to run multiple separate routing domains across their network. 802.11s, 3.03 wireless mesh stuff. Rui gave a talk about that at the conference. That goes into 8.0, so you can have wireless mesh networks previously. Virtual access points, multiple routing tables, and a new forwarding information base. These two lines actually are related. So for anyone who's worked on an actual router as opposed to a little SOHO service box, when you have a router, you have a routing table, which is one data structure, and you have a forwarding information base, which is a different data structure. And until recently, all of the BSDs kept all of that in the same place, and now we're realizing that, well, it might be a good idea to have a routing table and a forwarding base, and we're going to have routing vendors actually using our software. So that's been split out, so you have a separate hardware table, hardware forwarding table, and a routing table. Which allows us to do things like equal cost multipath routing and the multiple routing tables on top. So next up, zero copy BPF, because that way you can sniff people's packets faster, is a good thing to have. Kernel NFS locking update and NFS v4 support. Some changes on storage. I got a recent update. I love when people on IRC say, are you going to mention this? And I ask, well, when did that change? And they say 3 days ago. I'm calling out ZFS at this point, which is now production ready. I clearly was not watching the right web page when that was changed. So ZFS is now, it's been in FreeBSD for quite a while, but now it's ready for people to use by default. And theoretically will not eat your data. There's a new driver for HCI, there's the new GVIM support. GM part is now the default for all systems when you install it, so you'll see little messages coming out from that if you boot an old system on a new system. And then BSD labels have been extended to 26 partitions, which I don't know who's running 26 partitions, but someone just said yay. I'm done.
That's it.
How much time do we have for questions?
2 minutes and
30
seconds.
Yes! I win. I think that was the goal. Any questions? Even better, I'm done. Thank you very much.
Can we leave the stage? Right, so I dismiss all of these gentlemen. George, you're accidentally and unnecessarily on the stage. All right, so what we get now is the work in progress session. The goal of this exercise is to entertain and inform, and the way that we will do this is by putting developers up on the stage for 3 minutes and 3 minutes only. I'm going to attach this all properly here so it doesn't come out in our excitement. So, if you are giving a work in progress session, I hope you are towards the front of the room or near an aisle, because we're going to need you in just a moment. There are exactly two rules, 3 minutes each, and if you happen to run under 3 minutes, then what's left is for speaker questions. And first we have Brad Davis, who is here to talk about FreeBSD.org admins. And the lesson everyone has learned in using preview.app is do not hit the space bar.
Did you suck our...
Yes, your slides are all in here. We'll just go from presentation to presentation.
As you said, I'm Brad Davis. This is Simon. We make up some of the FreeBSD.org sysadmin team. So, cluster admin. We're made up of... How do you make it show all of it? That's better. Thanks. So we're made up of a couple of people. Here they are. What do? We keep the cluster up and running. That contains all, you know, all the developers know about freefall. It's the main jump host. We keep mail, DNS, and web up, subversion, CVS, etc. It's all our responsibility. We also manage we help manage some of the ports clusters to build packages and things like that. We do a lot of upgrades, you know, managing the machines. We've had a lot of machines in the past that have lagged really far behind, but we're getting better about that. But it's kind of scary when you upgrade the entire routing for all of the mail and all the mailing lists, and hopefully it comes back. So we've done that. Yes. I was very happy it came back. So they're running 7.2, and we've also been doing the eat our own dog food thing and been upgrading to 8.0 beta and RC1. So these few machines are now running 8.0, and we've discovered some flaws in the software and gotten things fixed. And that helps a lot when we can you know, point these out before the release happens and then have to deal with it later. So, as I mentioned before, the package clusters. So we've done, we have a package cluster at ISE, and we've managed, we've taken over kind of the network management from them, and now we actually have firewalls and routing that we manage instead of ISE managing it or it not existing at all, a little bit of both. And so we do a lot of, a little bit of Socrates with NanoBSD, which is wonderful. Thank you, Paul Henning. And so we do firewalling and failover with CARP. And so we know about the missing IPv6 support in CARP, and I have a developer who I'm holding under my thumb to get that fixed. So that's it. Yeah. Questions?
There are some pages on what's called /internal, which is mostly up to date, but it's not extremely detailed just because we sort of get to update it. But some of the information is there.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We have a new kid on the block, just that it hasn't been born yet. So, what is Enterprise BSD? It's just a new project still in the planning phase. We want to repackage the normal FreeBSD distribution with a focus on enterprise and business environments. We want to offer commercial backing and support, and we want to promote FreeBSD usage officially in the enterprise. Now, what isn't Enterprise BSD. We're not going to diverge too much from FreeBSD, and for sure we're not going to go proprietary. And we're not going to strip off features like ports, packages, PBIs, or other features. We're not going to limit access to the well-known and established procedures that were working for the FreeBSD sysadmins, and we're not going to make X11, the X server, a dependency, a required dependency. And, of course, it won't bite your cat. Now, what we are focusing on? First of all, we're going to try to use a packaging framework like DPKG or APT from Debian. We want to polish the administration tools. We want to do more quality assurance and stress testing. And we want to cope with the application, with commercial applications in the enterprise and the business environments. Also, we want to take a closer look at virtualization and cloud computing. And whatever else is needed in your business or enterprise. What it may look like? So first of all, DPKG apt-get. And that will make it easier to update your system. We want to introduce Bash and IP and other tools, GNU or other flavors that are useful and most of the people are accustomed with. We want to do some kernel tuning for the commercial applications used in the business. CLI and GUI tools for easy system administration, ZFS as a root file system and booting of ZFS, and installing grub by default. How can you help? In this early stage, your feedback is the most important help you can hand us. So tell us what your business needs. Go to our website, www.enterprisebusiness.com, and fill in our survey. And later on, of course, we'll need your help with development, packaging, and other stuff. Thank you very much, and thank you, KEG. Later on.
So what do I press? Okay. 64-bit quotas on FreeBSD. Kirk McCusick and myself are working on that. We've been working on that on and off for a while. It's not as trivial as it might seem. Why? We've had UFS2 for more than 5 years. We have 64-bit file system for quite a long time. But we still have 32-bit quotas, which means you can't have more than 4 billion files or 2 terabytes and still have quotas.
some would say use ZFS, but UFS2 is still widely used. This is what Quota internal data structure looks like, and actually the Quota file is just an array of that structure. There is no absolutely no header, no metadata, and nothing. It's just a sparse file with a list of those structures indexed by the UID or GID. As you can tell, everything is explicitly 32-bit here. This is the current version. And so how do we do it? We keep, in order to maintain compatibility, we keep the existing structure, but we rename it internally. We have a new one, which is identical, but everything says 64 instead of 32. We define DQ block to DQ block 64 so that in combination with what we what I say later about the existing set quota, get quota, set user usage commands are kept and renamed but not renumbered so that we maintain binary compatibility. And we maintain by aliasing DQ block to DQ block 64 and defining new 64-bit versions of the commands with the same name, we maintain source-level compatibility. Modulo assignments, if you try to assign a quota to an int or something, you might run into trouble. If you use the 32-bit interface, values will be clipped. If you use the 64-bit interface, which will be the default, but you have a 32-bit quota file, values will be clipped going in. Otherwise, values will be clipped going out. So they won't wrap around. If you set the quota to 4,000,001, it won't wrap around to 1. It will be clipped to 4,000,000 minus 1. Yeah. Userland. All the tools, Zquota, etc., need to handle both cases, both 32 and 64-bit. They also need to handle the case where quotas are already turned on and the case where they aren't. For instance, quota check runs before quotas are enabled, so they need to know how to access the file directly, and they also need to know how to access the file through the kernel. Currently, the code to read-write the quota file is duplicated in every single tool. It's horrible. The exact same code.
Hook. Removing you from the stage.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Everyone clap. Very good. You were almost there. John Baldwin, please. Yeah, you were clipped. That's the good news.
I only have one slide, so change it now. This is just one of the things that was on George's highlights. I'm John Baldwin. One of the things that was on the FreeBSD 8.0 feature list, it's also actually just been merged to 7. It should be in 7.3. But for those of you who have, for a long time, been wanting to have a 64-bit native NVIDIA driver, this is basically all the stuff to make that happen. So a couple of highlights of what it does. First, we added a new callback for device mmap so that instead of the normal approach of mmap where it does a callback into the device driver for each page, you can actually get a new callback DMF single that gets called when mmap is invoked in userland and has the parameters from the entire request, and the driver has an opportunity to return an arbitrary VM object to satisfy the entire request. There's a new type of VM object and a new API for managing scattergather lists of physical addresses, and what you can basically do is putting all this together, you can, or the first two together, you can take a scattergather list that describes a set of physical address ranges, build a VM object that's described by that, and return that to your mmap to fully describe whatever userland is trying to mmap. The big thing that's not a common problem for NVIDIA. The other thing that many graphics drivers really need is the ability to set memory attributes on memory ranges. Specifically on x86, this boils down to different caching attributes, or ways to instruct how the pages should be cached. It's sort of like MTRRs, if you're familiar with those, but on modern Intel processors, you can actually set these on each page in the PTE, and that's an extension of a PAT or a page attribute table, something like that. But anyway, we've implemented that largely with Alan Cox's help. It fully supports super pages that are currently in 8 as well as in 7, and that will break up super pages or they're handled when promoted into voting properly. Finally, I've been talking to the guy who does the NVIDIA driver. He's built a beta driver. He's tested it with native 64-bit and 32-bit binaries on a 64-bit driver on FreeBSD 8. is going to be testing on 7 soon. So hopefully they'll be able to get a beta driver out for people to test as well. This fork is also useful outside the NVIDIA driver. Eric Anholt, who is our current DRM maintainer, did some work using this driver to turn on node snooping fetches of textures using right combining mode for the textures for the Radeon driver and got better texture performance on Radeon driver. And even Linux can't do this because they don't have a way to do cache modes properly. And there was a commit yesterday to the VESA frame buffer driver in the kernel to turn on write combining mode for the VESA frame buffer, which in certain cases gave a 20% performance, performance improvement when scrolling stuff around. So that's about all I have.
You are 30 seconds early.
Yeah. Good. Any questions? Any questions in the 10 seconds I have left? I don't have a hard date. That depends on their internal QA process now and getting it scheduled out. But they want to have it out soon. They've been wanting to do this for years. So.
Very good. Okay. Thank you.
Luigi.
How do I start?
The left and arrow bars. Left and right cursor.
Okay, and zooming.
Your slides must have been scaled differently.
Okay, this is the only one I have, and I'm here to report of other work that people at PIS have been doing, including Marta Carbone and Fabio Cicconi, who you have heard giving a talk on disk simulator. We have two main tasks undergoing. One is the rewrite of the IPFW and dummy.net code. And we are particularly interested in seeing which ones are the performance bottlenecks of those two pieces of code, and how do we compare in terms of performance to other firewalls, including PF, the IP filter, which is on Linux, and so on. We are doing extensive measurement of performance, trying to figure out where are the bottlenecks. Some of them we already know. For instance, all the dynamic rules and dummy.net code are under a single write lock, so there is no chance to split the load on separate cores without interfering too much, and that's an area where we need more work. And some of the changes have been already done by Marta during the Summer of Code project, and we started merging them back to the head and then 8.0 after the release is out. The second work is was started from Fabio. It is on pluggable disk scheduler, and the problem here is that on many low-end machines with ATA disk like laptops or, you know, again, low-end machines, the performance is really horrible when you have competing tasks, especially when you run something like SVN update or checkout or CVS and a streaming application. One of the two is going to be starved until the other one has completed work. Now, Linux and possibly other systems have better scheduler than ours. They do anticipation, and that helps a lot. We had a prototype ready around March, presented in BSD Cannes. We have been delayed a little bit by some problems with dynamic insertion and removal of geom modules, but thanks to the help of Paul Henning, yesterday we discussed things a bit. I think we figured out where the problematic areas are. So we have basic support for the schedulers in 8.0. Basically, we needed to add a couple of fields to the struct bio to support the classification of requests, and we will have modules available as ports soon. We actually have already code that is working. I've been running it since March, but it's not completely in a production state that you need to know what you're doing to make effective use of them. So I'd be really interested if people would try out the scheduler stuff that we have, and also if you think you have ideas on features that should be added to dummy.net or IPFW and where the performance problems might be, please get back to us. That's all.
30 seconds.
Yeah. Dummy.net also does the scheduling, and we are planning some of the things that we're adding is support for more schedulers, so we will see something equivalent to that in the short term.
Thank you very
okay,
much.
Thanks.
Hi, so my name is Paweł Jakub Dawidek, and I would like to give you just an update on ZFS status in FreeBSD. So ZFS in 8.0, I discovered this problem report database in FreeBSD, and actually people were reporting bugs in ZFS implementation on FreeBSD, so I just went through all the bugs, and I think I fixed most of them or all of them. So, and those, most of those, I think all of those bug fixes are just are in dot are in 8 RC1, I think now. So I think ZFS is also ready for production use finally after 2.5 years, I think. So it was just silly to keep it experimental. We will see how that goes. So yay. Okay. For 9.0 and maybe for 8.1 or 8.2, we are bringing ZFS 18. There are some cool new features like write Z3, user and group quotas, snapshot holds, and some other random stuff. And the code is working actually, but what we are missing is regression tests. Solaris test suite for ZFS is not really portable to FreeBSD, and the functionality is so rich that it's basically a really hard process to verify that everything works. There are no regressions, which is a very hard process. So ZFS 18 may be delayed because you would have to come up with some kind of regression test suite. And the future of ZFS, this is basically stuff which is not yet even in Open Solaris, but it's in the pipeline of Sun Guys. There is the duplication. I think there are more legal problems. The implementation might be even there, but it's not yet in Open Solaris. There is encryption coming. There is this BP rewrite project, which will basically allow to remove disk from the pool, which is now impossible to do. And there are plenty of other cool stuff, unfortunately, because ZFS is still a very fast-moving target, so I will try to keep up. Thank you. Any questions? Yes? Yeah, so this is, I think this was more or less fixed by KEEP, but there are probably still some problems in this area. We basically advise not to use ZFS under 1 gig or something like that. But that's the same story in Open Solaris, I guess. Any other questions, if we have time?
We're probably done. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Peter Lusher.
Am I the last one?
No.
So I'm Peter Loscher. I'm with Internet Systems Consortium, and I'm here to talk very, very briefly about DHCP 6. Yes, it really does exist. So for those of you that are those of you who have implemented IPv6, you're probably wondering why shouldn't we use just router advertisements? Well, that's basically because if you've heard my talk yesterday, I am one of those people that believes EUI64 addressing is evil for many reasons, and especially for servers. Another reason is for just address planning. A lot of enterprises have static routing or static address planning policies, and injecting basically a whole bunch of EUI64 addressing makes their heads explode. And then there are the possible security issues, i.e. route hijacking and so forth. Now, granted, that's probably mitigated by just proper planning, but we've done it before ourselves. We set up a Cisco router for testing or for a deployment at a site and decide to not deploy it until tomorrow, and then realize that, well, it's still actually soliciting router advertisements for a detached network, and then breaks IPv6 for a day. So we already have DHCP for IPv4. Why not have one for IPv6? So ISC has developed ISC DHCP version 4. yes, we know the irony in the version numbering. Next thing you know, we'll be calling bind 10 bind X. it supports DHCP 4 and DHCP v6. The one caveat is that currently you need to run separate daemons to support v4 and then v6. You can't combine them. That'll be fixed in hopefully a future, like a 4.2. We do have support for the rapid commit option on the client side. We do support prefix delegation and IATA for native RFC DHCP version 6. And we also, as of 4.1, have a basic DHCP 6 relay agent. So the caveats, currently, I know this doesn't really affect most of you, but we only support Solaris, Linux, most of the BSDs. We only allow a single address per IA, and the host identifier is limited to a simple token. So where can you get this fine piece of code? Currently, right now, 4.1.0 patch level 1 is the current stable release. Those are the websites. It will be in FreeBSD user ports very, very shortly, and it's already in NetBSD packet source now. Last but not least, I should give a shout-out to Comcast. They're the folks who funded the initial work, and I can tell you the story about that later. Any questions?
We're all done. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Tony Finch. These slides were done by David Malone, who's already left, so I offered to do the talk for him. That's a typo. There's now a default ntp.conf file in FreeBSD 8. NTPD is still not enabled by default. You still have to turn that on yourself. Default configuration file points at some NTP pool servers that are run by the FreeBSD project for FreeBSD users. The general global NTP pool is not, they don't like vendors to put that into default configuration files, so we have our own servers. If you want to tweak the configuration file, there are instructions on how to do it for your more nearby NTP servers. And there are also some brief instructions on how you can improve the spoofing security of your NTP server. The comment towards the end of the file about what to do when your network goes AWOL is, I think, a remnant from an early version of the file. It got commented out because it was a bad idea, and newer versions of NTPD have an orphan mode, which does a better job of it. Finally, there's a bit of a warning. Merge Master has a bug in its handling of files that are added upstream. So if you run Merge Master upgrading to 8, then it might clobber your existing ntp.conf file if you have it. But this bug should be fixed soon. And that is all I have to say. Any questions?
We have a minute and a half.
Well, somebody else can talk in that minute and a half.
Was the first time server in Denmark?
I don't know, sorry. Look at the IP addresses.
Have you thought about working for D-Link?
Thank you.
Hello. I'm Vasilis. I'm working here in Cambridge. And I'm interested in the Army ABI support in the FreeBSD. The press space. The target is to have a cross-build GCC. So we have an ARM cross-compiling toolchain for FreeBSD that supports the latest extended ARM ABI. What are the gains of this? Is the binaries that you get when you compile with this toolchain are compliant for all the forgot-put ARM architectures. And you have proper support for V7 ARM architectures and all its new features, like you have faster context switching between ARM and Thumb. And for me, is to learn a bit more about the FreeBSD internals. I've been a user for quite some time, and like start contributing a bit. This is a two-part plan, which actually has to be done at the same time. You have to pull libc out of the building system, so you have the tool chain that you can ship with libc, so people can develop and sort of can build their applications on other systems like everybody else is doing. And the second part is push the tool chain along with updating bin utils down in the building system of FreeBSD in order to be able to build world and the kernel, so you have an ARM-based system on which you can run the binary you built from the first part. Currently, it's not much done. I built GCC 4.4 for FreeBSD because it was the only one that was supporting the EABI. All of them before that support the old ABI ARM. The project is falling back. I haven't done anything since June. Too much work and life interference. And what I have to do is now build libc for ARM FreeBSD and put all the work done so far on a blog or something, so if people see I'm doing something wrong, please give me a shout. So I'm happy to see there are lots of things going on FreeBSD ARM mailing list, and there are some other people doing things similar like that, like Mark Tingley. I haven't met him, I don't know if he's here. So I'll just pause progress and embarrass myself by asking silly questions in the FreeBSD ARM mailing list. So, thanks.
Questions?
Right, I've got no slides because I just came up with the idea to talk about this around noon today. We've all been plagued, well, many of us, by the growing number of servers we have to maintain, the burden of keeping them all up to date, all the ports that are in there. A lot of us also run servers with multiple GILs, like web servers with multiple instances. So I've been looking at ways to ease the job of the system admin, and I try to combine some tools to do that. The system is divided in the host system, which is used only to start up the GILs, and the GILs doing the job. The host system are put on NanoBSD, which can be put on a compact flash or a USB stick. Thank you, Kindfront, for bringing us NanoBSD, which is great. It runs all with only except for a memory file system for /var and /etc. From there, we start GILs, and I've been doing some work on how to set this up in a way that is easy to administer. Key here is that for every type of GIL, I make one prototype GIL, which contains in one file system boot and USR. You put your operating system in there, you upgrade it there, you put your ports in there and upgrade it there. It then gets snapshotted using ZFS. Thank you, Paul Jack, for bringing us ZFS, which is great. And this means that if you want to change your kernel and underlying operating system, you do it the NanoBSD way, which means we build it even on another server if you want, flash it onto the second partition of your compact flash or your USB stick, and just one reboot and you're up and running with your new kernel or a new base operating system. Have you made a mistake, or has someone else made a mistake and you have to roll back, one more reboot and you're back on your previous image? That's standard feature of NanoBSD. I now do the same with the GILs which are inside, because I use a prototype of which I make snapshots. The everstop per GIL tells which version, which snapshot to use for its top-level file system containing root and USR inside the GIL. And if you upgrade, it just takes a few seconds to, well, first change every step, tell it to use the new snapshot, do a etc/rc.dgil restart with the name of your GIL, and you're up and running in your new version. Again, if you want to roll back for whatever reason, change your everstep back and do the same restart, and you're back on your previous version. in just a service window of seconds. And I think this is a combination of some great tools provided by some other people here in the room to make the life of a sysadmin much more easy, much more bearable. And well, it's recent work. I really hope one of the next conferences will talk more.
The moment is loom, isn't it? Thank you very much.
So I think that's actually the end of our WIP sessions, and I guess the end of Eurobias to go. And I want to thank all of you for coming out, and I hope that we'll see you all next year in Karlsruhe. So thank you very much.